All right, welcome to Greek Club at Concordia Seminary in St. Louis. We are reading through the book of Acts, and we are in chapter 1, and we are picking up after a torturous sentence in verses 21 and 22. We're happy to see in verse 23, Chi and an aorist indicative active third person plural, so that's happy. So we'll just pick up there, verse 23. And we'll do that. That's short and easy enough. Kai estezon dua, Yosef ton kalumenon bar saban, hus ep eklethe justas kai matheon. So, yeah, this is pretty good. Estezon is the weak aorist indicative. It's you might conceivably remember that histemi has two third principal parts. Right. This is the weak, and in its active form, it is actually transitive. So to stand, you know, I stood the book on the table, say, and that's the meaning here. So after realizing that they have to replace Judas now, the narration continues, and they stood too. I mean, we might say they presented too or something like that, but it's easy enough. And now the two are... in apposition, that's why we have accusatives here. Of course, the proper names don't always decline, but Yosef and all that other stuff, except for the relative clause, would be accusative. So they put forward two, comma, Joseph, the one being kaleod bar saban. So his father's name is apparently Sabas, and this is his surname, right? Or one of his surnames. I had to look that up. I thought to myself, what's a surname? And it's just, like my surname is Gibbs, but that just happens to be because that's how American names work. It's just another name that's been added to your proper name. That's what a surname is. And lots of times and places don't have last names the way we do. So Joseph, who is also called son of Saba or Sabas, now a relative clause, who, and now epikaleo, actually one of the meanings for epikaleo is to surname. So he has two of them. He can be known as son of Sabas, but also Justus, justice, right? And I think, I didn't really look at this up, but I think this is an example. I was just rereading sections of Richard Baucom's Jesus and the Eyewitnesses, and he talks about the names in the Gospels and things like that. It's not uncommon for Jews to have a Jewish name and a Greek name. See? So Joseph would be the Jewish name, and Justus would be the Greek name. Right? And the other candidate then is Matthias. Right? Those are the two. Now, there is a variant reading here that's not reflected in the manuscript, and it's this sentence. And each of them was hoping, I hope the other guy gets it. Because to be an apostle is a very, very difficult thing. But grammatically, at least, verse 23 is not too bad. Yeah, don't pick me. Here am I, send him. Any comments or questions on verse 23? Again, the number 12 is important, right? Because this is the seed of the new Israel, or the true Israel, we might say it either way. So,
just a comment.
Yeah, Dan.
Why do they? This is the thing. Why do they go with Joseph and they get all this stuff behind Joseph and then they say and Matthias?
I have no idea. Yeah, why does Matthias not have a surname, or why he's not, why isn't it given?
You know,
yeah,
even though,
right.
You know, and Matthias is the one that's chosen.
I know.
Yeah,
I couldn't say. You know, Baucom would say maybe Matthias was simply more well known, and he might not have needed, you know,
to the
reader of Acts. I mean, it's a guess, but. Right, so.
Yeah, that makes sense because then later on, Luke would be writing this. So
yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah.
You know, Matthias would be known.
Yeah, so Joseph Justice has dropped out of the story, so to speak. So, and there's lots and lots of Josephs in the in Palestine, lots. So,
that might be another reason why they did it.
40% an Israeli scholar has collated all of the proper names from 330 BC to 280 in Palestine. See, it's not much of a plot in a cast of thousands, right? And I think there I don't there are like 800 or 900 names for men, and of course, given that time and place, many fewer female names, proper names. And like 48% of the male names are nine names, or six, or something like that. So there's a bunch of Jesuses, for instance. The most common name is Simon. See, and then Joseph, Judas is very common. See,
that's like a Greek Orthodox.
Yeah.
Like John.
Exactly. Balcom, his guess, and others have guessed it too, I think, is that it's the influence of the Maccabees, the Hasmonean rulers. You know, there's a Judas, and then Simon is the next one. And so his guess is that it's kind of a patriotic thing, if you could use that term somewhat anachronistically.
But today we use celebrities, right?
Today we use celebrities, that's right. That's right. That's right. That's right. And celebrity comes from two Greek words, sel, which means a person who, and ebrity, which means doesn't do anything important for a living. Unlike maybe somebody who works in a nursing home or something like that. So, okay, after that screed, we'll do verses 24 and 25. Kai pros examinoi apon, su kyrie kardiognosta panton, an adexon, han ex alexo ex ek tuton dua henna. Labain tantapan tes diakonias tautes kai apostoles aphes par ebe judas poriuthenai es tantapan tan idion. So we start with a participle. I mean, just the fact that they're praying and saying lets you know that the participle is a little unnecessary. It also is a decent reminder that the rule of thumb that you learn in elementary Greek for the relative time of the participle is only a rule of thumb. It's very unlikely that first they pray and then they say, right? So aorist participle middle from pros eukomai, right? So simply, they prayed and said. And now we have second person singular followed by two vocatives, right? Kyria. And then kardiognosta is just an adjective. But it's used here as a noun. You, Lord, the one who knows the heart of all. Right. And now an imperative from Anna Deknumi. Yeah, thank you, Jeff. Appreciate that. So, an adexon is an aorist, indicative, active, second singular. I suppose literally it means show up, because you've got ana on the front, but usually just show. And now, for no apparent reason, of which I can be confidently aware, we don't actually get the direct object until the end of the verse, henna. See, that's accusative singular, masculine. Of course, it's the number one, so of course it's singular, but show one, and now the relative clause modifies the one. Show one whom. Now, I have to confess that I was confused by this form, ex alexo, because I had forgotten about how many evil second-person singular middle endings there are. This actually parses as aorist indicative middle. It's from ek legomai, which is deponent, second-person singular. The form, the parallel form from luo would be eluso. And again, it's second singular, right? So it just means whom you chose. Again, because the verb is deponent. So show the one whom you chose out of these, the two, for what purpose? Verse 25, from Lambano, to receive the place of this ministry and apostleship, literally. We'll come back to that. From which Judas went over, this is from Parabino, from which Judas went over, or we might even say left, to go into the place his own one. So, I'll be right back. So,
we're doing Greek club and we can't hear. That's all right. Just a temporary hiatus there. So.
It's all good. I suppose it's a good problem to have that you have so many people around that things get crowded, right? As opposed to echoing in empty halls, right? So that part's not too bad. From which Judas went across to go to his own place. Now, I was looking in a few grammars at the beginning of the verse, the place of this ministry and apostleship. Does anybody know what hendiadys is? It's one of these figures of speech that's... It literally means one through two, okay? And when it happens, you've got usually a noun linked with and then another noun. And context kind of leads people in the direction of saying, well, it's really a descriptive, the second noun, or maybe the first one is descriptive of the first. So... Blasterbrunner Funk suggests that here, and if that's the case, then apostolēs needs to be treated as an adjective. So it would be receive the place of this apostolic service, apostolic ministry. Okay. Now, of course, Wallace has a different take on this. He actually wants to make this an example, a non-example of Granville Sharp's rule. I'm very happy to bring this up because I haven't talked about Granville Sharp's rule in some weeks now, and I've been feeling the need. Now this is this bizarre but apparently quite reliable rule that Granville Sharp, as I understand it, was a pious British layman. And back in the 19th century, I think it was a 19th century discovery. And here's the deal. Now... I want to say I'm a professional. Don't try this at home. Granville Sharp's rule applies to article, noun, chi, noun. So you have, you can have just a substantive. So Wallace actually calls this the TSKS construction, and that stands for T is the, and then S is substantive. The K is chi, and the S is substantive. It's a very bizarre abbreviation, but once you get it. So here's the deal. If the substantives are singular, if they refer to persons, and they are not proper names, again, I do this for a living, then the presence of the single article on both guarantees that they are referring to the same person, not two different people. And you're thinking, so big deal. And part of the payoff of this is actually there's some Christological passages. For instance, in Titus, this construction occurs, and Paul talks about the appearing of our great God and Savior, Jesus Christ. And the grammar almost certainly guarantees that God and Savior refer to the same person, that is Jesus. So it's one of the few examples. There's only about 8 or 9 examples in the New Testament where the noun theos is directly applied to Jesus, right? So there is some theological payoff. Now, I'm happy to say that having discussed Granville Sharp's rule, this is not an example. because it doesn't refer to persons, right, but to abstract concepts. So, and if you're thinking that I'm just bringing this up because I'm stalling because I didn't get a chance to prepare enough verses, you're wrong. I am way ahead. I'm basically just trying to show off. But again, Granville Sharp's rule actually does it does apply in some very especially Christologically significant passages. And if I can actually, here's another one. It's kind of an apologetic. Matthew, alone of the evangelists, for instance, he links the Pharisees and Sadducees together with a single article. Plural, tone, like scribes of the Pharisees and Sadducees. A couple of times he does this. And more critical or liberal scholars, if I could use that term loosely, skeptical maybe, they will sometimes say, look, Matthew is clearly a late author. He doesn't even understand the context because he links the two groups with one article and he thinks they're the same. See? Well, as a matter of fact, no, because Granville Sharp's rule doesn't apply because the substances are not singular. So there are times actually when this rule actually, you know, comes into play, and so it's, and if you want like 15 or 20 pages on it, I think those pages can be found in Daniel Wallace's Greek Grammar Beyond the Basics. So all that's, okay, that's enough. Verse 24 and 25, what do you think? Anything? All right, and then 26. Kai edokan, klerus autois, kai epizen, ha kleros epimataion, kai sun kat epse fiste, meta ton hendaka apostolon. And they gave, literally, lots to them with respect to them, and the lot, piptoed, this is just the aorist indicative from pipto, fell upon Matthias. And he was, I had to look this up, this is from sun kata tse fidzo, which means to like enroll or list with or something like that. Yeah. Luke loves compound verbs. So we have two on the front of the basic verb. So I think this verb only occurs like once elsewhere in Greek literature or something like this. But you can see at least that it's an aorist indicative passive, right? Because of the theta eta on the. And by the way, notice that just for morphology's sake, the temporal augment is in between the basic verb stem, which is sephidzo, and both of the prefixed prepositions. So he was enrolled with the 11 apostles. Now, take a look. This is a little numerology here. Take a look at the variant reading. See that dog leg right with the 1 by Hendaka, right? So get your one index finger there, and at the bottom, it's the last variant in chapter 1. Do everybody spot it? And you've got iota beta, right? And manuscript D alone, and also Eusebius apparently reads that. Now, I had to look this up. I thought I knew, but I looked it up to make sure. As you know, there are no, I think, is one is a cardinal number, isn't that right? 1, 2, 3, and then first, second, third is ordinal, isn't that right? Let's pretend that's right. Okay. So there are no cardinal numbers in Greek. They use the letters of the alphabet. Okay, and iota is the number 10. Now, if you count, you'll think, wait, it should be 9. But there are extra letters in the Greek alphabet that we don't normally know. Is that there's 6 is a letter called the digamma. Okay, it's in all the grammars. Yeah, nice eyebrows, Bill. That was good. It's like, oh yeah, well, really, I like the letters we have. So iota is 10, and interesting, beta is not 1 but 2. So manuscript D would have us read. According to cardinal numbers, he was enrolled with 12 apostles. So anyway, I figured that the guys who actually come to Greek Club care enough about Greek to want to review their cardinal numbers in Greek. So the digamma kind of looks like a slanty F, at least when it's printed out on pages And I don't know, actually, if it occurs anymore in Koine Greek except in its use as a number. Does anybody know? Somebody want to make something up? This would be the time. So, okay. All right, well, let's get into chapter 2 then, unless there are questions or comments about 20, verse 26.
Do you think enrolled meant that they were actually written down on a scroll or something?
I don't know. I think this is a very official move, though. And, he got his apostle badge, right? Yeah.
I like this. In other words, if I go to the boat, if I pray,
yeah.
I'm okay.
Yeah, exactly. Well, do you remember there was a time in a synodical convention about three or four conventions ago when they had elected... they elected someone, and then later on, it had to do with bylaws or for who could, how many representatives from a district could be on the same commission or committee or something. Anyway, they found out later that they had elected someone in violation of the bylaws. And so rather than go all the way back through, the convention decided to cast lots between the next two candidates. And so they did. I think they drew straws. Does anybody actually know what you did in the first century to cast lots? I don't actually know how it worked. And I didn't...
Was it dice?
I don't know if it was dice or... Yeah. And how many sides did the dice have?
There were six.
Oh, there were. Okay. You're just making that up. Okay, excellent.
Well, I know they used to...
I would have had to stop and count how many are there now.
You know, the Greeks always had a bowl and they would draw.
Yeah, like tokens or something.
Like tokens,
yeah.
And then you would throw them in. And
yeah.
That's what they call blackballing.
Okay.
If you threw a black one in,
okay.
That meant you out.
Well, maybe there's a variety of ways of casting lots. This, is, by the way, this is the way we do grades here at Concordia Seminary. We have grading dice. Actually, I think Dr. Oswald has grading dice. It's like A, B, C, D, E, F or something. And then like pluses and minuses. And
I thought you used it. I thought they did that with
the dartboard. No, that's the way calls are assigned.
That's a call,
yeah,
right.
That's right.
Exactly.
Exactly. Oh, no, they've learned our secrets. Now we'll have to kill them. that's right. Okay, well, let's get one more verse, and then we'll stop so we can all go our merry way. But we'll set up at least the festival of Pentecost. So chapter 2, verse 1. Kai ento simple rustai tein hemeron tes pentecostes eison pontes hamu epi ta auta. So we start with this construction that you see fairly common. It usually has a temporal meaning, when or while. It can be causal, but it's usually temporal. Plus the dative article plus the infinitive. And you might be able to figure out that simple rustai is, it would be the present infinitive passive of simple ra'o. Okay. And the accusative subject is day. Right? And when the day was fulfilled, literally, right? Now, which day? The day of Pentecost, right? So that's the initial construction, and it's a dependent clause, temporal, right? And then the main verb then is eison, the imperfect of eime, and the subject is pontes. Hamu means together, and epita auta means upon the same, or probably in the same place. So. And when the day of Pentecost was fulfilled, we would say they all were together in the same place. And then the last days get underway in the verses that follow. Pentecost, by the way, the term, as you probably know, just means 50. And I always have to review the festivals and such. I never have gotten those firmly in my brain. Pentecost is the same as first fruits. And I think it's also called the Festival of Weeks because it's 7 weeks after, essentially after Passover, right? And so it's originally a harvest festival, although I read an article on it this morning in some of the writings of what we would call the intertestamental period. There's a close association between this festival and the giving of the law on Mount Sinai. And So some people think that there's a kind of a covenant, new covenant action associated with Pentecost. But we can come back to that when we read a little farther. So, all right, very good. Thank you very much.